Soon Kim Seng, Rear 8. Yes, you were telling me about the Japanese authority wouldn't allow people to move freely in Singapore in relation to the control of food.
what I'm referring to is the general security problem. After the troops, the advanced troops that had occupied Singapore, after having had a rest, then they were sent forward position, that is to say, towards Indonesia and beyond. Then fresh troops would arrive, but then the number of troops that require to station in Singapore would be doing logistic work, I should say. That's the right term for the military to use. So the actual fighting combat troops would be sent out. So they would not have too many troops stationed here permanently. And the internal security would be in the hands of the local police and the Kempetai, the so-called military police, running all the police stations. So, actual movement of people would be limited because, number one, unless there is a necessity for the people to move from one area to the other on some urgent business, otherwise people prefer to stay in their own district as much as possible. And then there was not much in the newspaper that you want to read about, because newspaper again is being controlled, and the newspaper will only serve as a means of communication between the government and the people with reference to notices, certain policy, new introduction of certain new policies and so forth. So therefore, generally people try to restrict their movement as far as possible. There's transport difficulties on the top of all of this.
So, in that case, had you come across any complaints from the farmers? You know, when you deliver animal feed to the farmers or went to their house to buy pigs, did they ever complain to you about the distributions of animal feed?
As long as the farmers get whatever their necessities are, like rice, staple food, other necessity from the sundry shops, I think the main problem would be to convert their assets into cash. And once they are able to convert their poultry, pigs and so forth into cash, and they can buy whatever they want, either from the shops in their district, or they come to the city and go to a bigger shop to buy whatever is necessary. So the arrangement is to their own convenience, according to their ability in having purchasing power. I cannot remember the farmers bringing up their personal problem about difficulty of getting their supplies, because after we took over the organization of distribution, it is within their doorsteps to obtain the whatever they require for their animal feed. Perhaps some might experience difficulty in the early days because they have no cash, or maybe their pigs are still too small, or they have not enough of poultry and chicken and ducks. So people in the rural area depend on their land. They always have a little bit of cultivation of vegetables and fruits and so on. So compared to the people living in the city, I would say at the time of siege, maybe the people in the outlying areas were better than the people in the city. We had water supply being cut off by damage of the pipeline and so on. So we had to go to the well to get what our daily need of fresh water. Whereas in rural area, they already had water wells. So they are used to their humble way of life. So not so much inconvenient to them.
So was it compulsory for them to sell their pigs to the government?
They had to sell only through one channel. They cannot sell it to any private, they are not allowed to sell. They must sell it to the government and obtain animal feed on official rate.
So to sell the pig to the government was a condition to get animal feed?
Yes, it was.
So on the whole, did you think the rearing pig was a profitable business under such kind of control?
It was pure necessity for the farmers to be doing that same kind of thing, and perhaps they could also sell it to a private buyer who would perform illegal slaughter and sell the meat in a black market. So it is quite possible that not all farmers would be selling it to the government. That is why there is some illegal slaughter going on. And meat is also available in the open market, not from the authorized stalls. So for that reason, some farmers must be selling their products for a higher price.
So was it your department's duty to control that also, to control illegal selling of pigs illegally?
That doesn't come under our department. Maybe perhaps in the Tukubutusi they may have an inspectorate to go out and try and arrest if possible, take legal action. That activity does not come under our department.
Say, for example, if there was a farmer has about 10 pigs. Okay. So the first time he sold 5 to your department, to the government. Mm. And did you keep an account that he still have another 5?
No,
and
we don't keep a statistic or the census of the farmer's stock, livestock. We don't keep. We don't take census of farmer's livestock. It's not our duty.
And the animal feed given to the farmer, was it working to reduce by them selling how many pigs to the government department?
It was just an outright purchase. It is up to the farmer to decide how many pigs he wish to sell in a month, in a week, or in a year. We have got no restriction on his wanting to sell the number of pigs.
And the animal feeds received by the farmers, did you reduce the amount because he had already sold 5 pigs to...
No, we don't take that into computation or consideration. We merely supply to the depot according to the instruction that we receive from our department. And it is up to the depot man to release the stock to the farmer according to farmer's requirement. I believe if the farmer happened to have quite a number of pigs and he require additional feedstock in addition to what he might have been entitled. I think he is entitled to come to the our head office to make that application. So that on that part, I'm not aware of it.
Because it seems that the pig farmers were only rearing pigs for the government and not for their own profit, because they had to sell at the government
control price. True. Well, since the war came to an end after 3 years and 8 months, I believe that had the war prolonged, what different changes would come on Shonanto at that time, I'm unable to predict. Generally, the people were not happy under foreign control. So, no matter how good the system is, we just simply don't like to live under the Japanese. That's all. That is everybody's feeling. The sooner they go, the better. That was how everyone felt.
And in your department, you mentioned about Taiwanese.
Yes, when Japanese troops came into Singapore, they brought along Taiwanese as interpreters. In fact, even the soldiers, I learned some of them, that they were born in Taiwan and they were sent to Japan for military training. So in other words, Japan recruited soldiers, army personnel from their occupied territories, such as Manchuria. Taiwan was under Japanese before the Second World War, I believe. So, Taiwanese in civilian uniform, used as the eyes and ears of the Japanese military to spy on us, to see what sort of attitude we had against the Japanese. And we were very careful not to allow or cause irritation to the Taiwanese. So we just be nice to them.
Were there any Taiwanese working in your department?
I think there were 2 Taiwanese working with us. He would sometimes come to the oil mills to supervise our work. And that was only a few months, for about 3-4 months, and then they just vanished. We have no idea where they went. We don't even know where they come from at first.
Were they employed by
the military, by the government? Whether they are under Tukubutusi or they are under Kempeitai or they are under Gunsikambu, we have no idea. We dare not ask too many questions in the first place.
That was when your office was at the East Asian
building, yes.
Did they work in this building?
No, they have no desk. They just came under their own military transport, I think, and make themselves present at the oil mills. Just drop in and see how things are going on. Talk to us.
In Hokkien?
In Hokkien, yes. They don't want to speak English. I think they understand. They pretend not to know and speak English so that they could quietly eavesdrop on our conversation, perhaps.
So you felt that they were keeping eyes on
I believe that was
your department?
I believe they were doing intelligence work to see whether they can pick up any information, or to see whether we people are security risk to them, or whether or not we are honest and loyal to the government.
Did they introduce themselves to?
In fact, we were told by our chief clerk that certain Mr. So and So will be visiting and so on. We were told beforehand.
Visiting? You mean inspecting your work?
Yeah, inspecting our work.
Not the oil mill.
No, not the oil mill. So I believe that these people must be from Gusi Kambu.
And after a few months later, did they still occasionally?
No. We met them only on a few occasions for about 1 or 2 months. Then after that, they just vanished.
Was there any Taiwanese working or as an employee of your department?
No, none. All local staff.
All Chinese, yes.
We had one Eurasian, ex-school teacher in our group. And he was also doing the same similar work as we were from the start, as a clerk collecting pigs. Then later on delivery, then later on, we need to have one clerk in the oil mills to be coordinating the work with the office. We must have one permanent clerk in the oil mill at the time of issuing the goods to control the allocation of distribution to the depots and so on. There should be someone.
And were you required to use Japanese language at work?
No. We still, from day to day, our method of communication or medium of communication is still English. All the documents, written, figures, words, everything in English.
Any instructions from above that you ought to learn Japanese language?
Later we were encouraged to learn Nippongo, and those people in the office during their spare time, maybe they have a free lesson from the newspaper, so they cut it out and then they learn a few words a day. And I myself never made an effort to study any of the Nippongo.
Was it compulsory to learn
Japanese? In some organization, yes, but not in our department.
And did your Japanese boss ever mention anything about learning Nippongo?
No. He never brought up officially. There was no comment. And he spoke to us in English. He was quite happy with the communication. No problem.
This person, Hiyashi, was he a civilian?
Yes, he was a civilian. He was a civilian. And this gentleman is quite gentle. Not the army rough and tough guy type. Very civil, very cultured. So we get along fine with him.
Did he speak English well enough?
Very slow.
Because in some department, some Japanese prefer to speak Japanese to their staff, but in your case?
In our case, we ran into those that we met could speak English. The most interesting person that we met was in the MBK or MSK store, two Japanese brothers. They were repatriated from America, exchange of prisoners, I think. So they were lucky. They managed to get out of America. I don't know from which center of exchange that they were brought into Singapore. Two brothers could not speak Japanese, could not read and write Japanese. They only speak American. So when we went to work, the two brothers were very happy to meet someone who could communicate. And we did had a very jolly good time. Night work doesn't seem to be a problem, so we were able to ask them about America. And then we asked them all sorts of questions, and they were very frank. They tell you everything. They even say they dislike this military bastard, his superiors he was referring to. So that was a very pleasant experience, meeting a Japanese born in America, not knowing any Japanese. So these are the only two brothers that we met.
Did they ever talk about their opinions of the war?
I think they are more pro-Americans than pro-Japanese. They dislike the war because they are separated from their parents and brothers and sisters. Only two of them are required to do, in other words, they are doing military work, essential work. They are required to contribute. It is something like compulsory conscription, although they were not sent to the front line to fight because of their education and some family background, perhaps. Some VIP must have put them in a safe place and give them something to do.
And do you know the background of Hiyashi?
No. He said that he was a businessman in Japan, and he is being sent out to Shonan to be a civil servant. So he put on uniform, but not the army uniform. He has got no rank. I'm quite sure he must have once upon a time been in the army. But then he behaved more like a civilian.
Was he the only Japanese in your department?
No, he was the second officer. The first officer left when we first came to East Asia Deep Building. The other gentleman was more elderly. He was with us only for a few months. And he was recalled or transferred, or he went back to Japan, we got no idea.
Then came Hiyashi.
Then Hiyashi came along.
And Hiyashi was the only person there then?
Yes, he was the only Japanese officer in our department. And the rice department, there were other Japanese there, maybe one or two. We have no contact with the officers in the rice department.
I was told that all Japanese officers were expected to spread the Japanese culture and Japanese spirit. But this Hiyashi didn't seem very keen.
No, he was not doing that extra work that you mentioned. The time he spent in our office is also very short. He will come in the morning, 1 hour, 2 hours, and then he would disappear. And sometimes in the afternoon, you might not see him at all. So I don't know what sort of assignment he has got from his government. He will come to office every day, but there is no need for him to sit 8 hours. There's no work for him to do 8 hours in our department in the first place. So it was merely to come and show us that there is someone around to be the boss. Other than that, nothing.
Okay. Mr. Sun, in your store, apart from animal feed, you mentioned you also had steamed rice. How much steamed rice did you have in your store?
There was only one lot of steamed rice that I received. And this lot of steamed rice has caused a bit of a problem later. During my medical leave, I left my store key with the chief clerk. And when I returned to work after my illness, I found that there was some shortage. And I was asked to go to the city hall to explain the reason why there was a shortage. That particular day in question, when I went to the city hall, a B-29 visited Singapore, and there was a as the B-29 approached the city area, I went to take shelter at the St. Andrew Cathedral compound. And after the air raid was over, I went to the city hall for an interview to explain for what reason there was a shortage in the stock. Well, there was no long conversation with the officer there, but I was only told to go back to my office. So actually there was no inquiry into the matter. So I returned to my office and continue with my day's routine. After some weeks or some months, I cannot remember, there was a evening party at the Japanese officer from the city hall. There were 5 persons all together: my chief clerk, his tele clerk, myself, 3 from our department, and then from the city hall, the Japanese boss and his assistant.
Who was this Japanese? What department was he in charge?
His department was in charge of the abattoirs as well as our food control department.
Including rice?